Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, December 17th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off our last full week of Bang the Book Radio shows. I'll let you know throughout the week what our plan is for next week with Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. But as far as today goes, we've got one guest on the program. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. We'll do our college football first look for week two of the bowl season, and then we'll talk college basketball in our Handicapping the Hardwood segment as well. Lots of great stuff over at bangthebook.com. You definitely want to make sure you take advantage of all of that. My week 16 NFL line report went up this morning. We've got college basketball and NBA totals picks, spot plays, all kinds of different stuff going on in the basketball world over at the website, including my thoughts on tonight's Arizona State versus Vanderbilt game, and also a breakdown from the NBA side of things with the Grizzlies taking on the Warriors tonight. And make sure you follow us on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Bang the Book, and check out those videos that we've got going on. I'm posting one 6 days a week, and coming up here after the new year, we'll have some more surprises for you over there on that Bang the Book YouTube page. So you definitely want to make sure that you're ready for that. Keep in mind that this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up using that promo code BTB200, good for a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook and a 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and that is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going well, you know. I can't complain. Good start to the week. Had a nice weekend on the plays, and you know, it's Monday morning. Looking forward to another week, so glad to be on the show as always.
Glad to have you here, and of course, Joe Everett not able to make it here today. A very busy time of the year. I don't know how many people know this, but Joe's actually an orchestra-level musician. He's very, very good, and obviously a very busy time of year here with all the Christmas concerts and all that type of stuff. So he had something he needed to take care of this morning. Hopefully we'll be able to hear from Joe sometime here throughout the week or maybe at some point next week. But in any event, Kyle, we're going to do our college football first look first here. We'll take a look at the five bowl games coming up on the weeknights here. And then as we go throughout the week, we'll tackle the Saturday games. But before we get into that, the past results here, pretty surprising overall, I would say. We had interim head coaches lead blowouts in the New Orleans and the New Mexico Bowl. I really liked Arizona State and the Las Vegas Bowl. They didn't come through for us. But, you know, the Pac-12 now 2-14 in the last 16 bowl games against the spread. Anything from Saturday surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, I went 3-0 on my totals. I went 0-2 on my sides on Saturday. So, yeah, I actually had both of the teams that got blown out, North Texas and Middle Tennessee State. I like Middle Tennessee State a good amount, and I'm a little bit surprised at the way they lost. I will say, you know, North Texas, first of all, when Mason Fine got injured, I knew I was beat. You know, you have no chance once he went down. By far the best player on that team, and they can't do it without him. But, you know, Middle Tennessee, the beginning of that game, they had their chances. Anybody who watched the beginning of that game, at one point, I think about the end of the first quarter, they had about 120 yards, and App State had minus one, and they were winning 3-0. I felt like the beginning of that game, it can be a big momentum changer if you don't score, you miss field goals, you throw interceptions right in the end zone, and then you're still only up 3-0. And then the other team gets some big plays, and all once you're behind. I felt like that changed the game quite a bit. Having said that, I was impressed with Appalachian State and the way that they kept it going all throughout the game. That App State defense is for real. Pass defense looked pretty good there against Brent Stock, so I was surprised how easily App State scored later in the game. I'd say that was my biggest surprise of the weekend.
Well, and what's interesting about this first round of bowl games here is they can have an impact on future bowl games. The Pac-12, another loss, as mentioned, with Arizona State. And Arizona State had plenty of chances to cover this game. Dude fell down in the open field, and they had to punt. They were stopped at basically the goal line right before halftime when they could have scored a touchdown and taken a lead into halftime. Instead, settled for the chip shot field goal. Jeff Tedford's coaching staff made adjustments. Arizona State didn't. That was pretty much the game in the second half. But now you've got the Pac-12 again looking bad. two blowout victories for the Mountain West, and we're seeing San Diego State money come in for Wednesday. So a fade of the MAC ongoing as usual there with Ohio in that game. Maybe we see some BYU money later in the week. We haven't seen it yet. But, you know, these early bowl games, people kind of get these preconceived notions about these conferences, and they can have a significant impact on the odds as we go forward.
Oh, absolutely. I think that what happens early in bowl season has a big impact on the lines. And, you know, if you think you like that team, then maybe it's a chance to find some extra value. Like you said, you know, some of these could move to the point where maybe a team from that conference has too much value, because although conference to conference records do matter in bowl season, it's not everything. And, you know, nothing that we talk about is all important, and it's the only one thing. And obviously motivation is very important in bowl season, but that's not everything either. So I think it, all these things you should consider as something, as part of your toolkit to try to handicap these games, but, you know, you got to be well-rounded as well. And I think that, you know, looking at it conference to conference only is a bad way to look at it. And I think that's what the media likes to push pretty heavily. And that's why a lot of people think of that first. But, you know, these teams are individual teams, and you're not playing conference versus conference as far as, you know, each game. So, you know, try not to get stuck in that too much. Now, obviously, it matters that the Pac-12 is 2-14 ATS in the last 16, because, I mean, the Pac-12 sucks. We know that. You know, does that mean that everybody from the Pac-12 is not going to cover? No, it doesn't mean that. So, you know, something to consider, but not something to weight extremely heavily.
Well, we won't see the Pac-12 here until Wednesday, December 26th in the Cheez-Its Bowl. That's between TCU and Cal. And by the way, I have to say, as much of a joke as the Cheez-It Bowl really sounds like, the logo is really badass for that game, if anyone's had the chance to take a look at that. But in any event, one last thing I want to mention here, because I actually recorded a video yesterday. It's going up on our Bang the Book YouTube page here today. You know, I had a big play that I really liked in the NHL on Saturday with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and, you know, they didn't come through, lost the game in overtime 4-3. They were the wrong side throughout the game. But, you know, you mentioned North Texas, and it's very important to keep in mind here across all sports. Doesn't matter if it's bowl games, NHL, NBA, doesn't matter at all. You don't want to step too far out with any one play because, you know, as you said, you've got North Texas, Mason Fine goes down, and they're screwed. And your entire handicapping process for that game revolved around Mason Fine being healthy, because that changes everything, the offense, the defense, everything. So this is why you never want to step out on a big play, because if something happens, you know, look at Darius Garland for Vanderbilt, and or not Vanderbilt, for Vanderbilt, you know, because I wrote this preview up for tonight's basketball game. He played 2 minutes in that game against Kent State. They lost that game outright. So these things happen. You know, you never want to step out too far on a play because the game still has to be played. And whether you think you've got a great motivation edge, a matchup edge, a schematic edge, whatever it is in college football, you still don't want to go overboard with any of these games.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, as soon as Mason Fine went down, I said, hey, I'm done. That's it. And it's certainly discouraging to say whether it was the end of the first quarter. I think it was somewhere at the end of the first quarter. But in a game like this, you know, like you said, it can happen in any sport. You know, one team loses a really important player and you say, that's it. You know, if you put 10% of your bankroll on that play, it's really discouraging because maybe you had a decent handicap, but you'll never know. So that's something to keep in mind, that it's much safer to have something like 3% of your bankroll on a game and say, hey, that's a bummer, you know, move on to the next one. If you put 10 or 20% of your bankroll on it, that's hard to recover from.
All right. So let's take a look at these five bowl games here. We'll start down in Boca Raton, Northern Illinois, UAB 2.5-point favorite here in this spot. We talked about Rod Carey last week. He's one of the worst coaches in bowl games of any program in a bowl game here. The MAC, obviously not great in bowl games, although Eastern Michigan did manage to cover there against Georgia Southern and, you know, would have won the game if we would have had a hashtag college kickers moment. But in any event, here down in Boca, UAB -2.5, this line up from -1. What do you think about game 211-212, Kyle?
This is a really interesting game to me because if you look at it from a side standpoint, You know, this is a game where all of the angles that I talked about last week, and I got multiple people telling me that they appreciated those angles from last week, and certainly always happy to hear that the listeners like those angles and trends, the different systems for bowl games. But just about every single one of them that I ever said last week is on Northern Illinois this week. I can't take Northern Illinois. I think that this is a spot where, you know, if you want to fade the public's taking UAB. If you want to take the better defense, the team that can stop the run, Northern Illinois is the side. Having said that, it means too much to me that the MAC is not good in bowl games and Rod Carey has not done well at all in bowl games. You know, I think Bill Clark over Rod Carey is a really big person. And I think that's hard to quantify, but it's definitely there. UAB, look, you know, they've been amazing the last couple of years. I can't say enough good things about UAB. And, you know, at this point, I've kind of become a UAB fan. Obviously, I'm a Buckeyes fan first, but I like to root for UAB. You know, this is a program that didn't even have a football program just, what, 3 short years ago now? And the last couple seasons, UAB has just been a big-time moneymaker. And that's why they're getting the money in this one, and part of it is a fate of the MAC, certainly. You know, if you want to take the better defense, if you want to take the team that can stop the run, I couldn't blame anybody for taking Northern Illinois. I think this one will probably go to 3, so if you like Northern Illinois, you might as well wait for the 3. At the same time, I can't take Northern Illinois. You know, like I said, you know, these angles are what they are. I think they're good angles to follow, but it's not everything. And the fact that Northern Illinois has consistently been that bad under Rod Carey, and in general, I just don't think Rod Carey is a very good coach. Bill Clark, a very good coach. I can't take Northern Illinois. It would be UAB or pass for me.
Yeah, I mean, it would be UAB or pass for me, too. And for Northern Illinois, the defense is very good. They can stop the run, but also the offense is terrible. I mean, their offense is really, really bad. UAB's got a solid defense, too. So I don't see Northern Illinois lighting up the scoreboard here in this game. I do think maybe the under 43 is a decent look. But also for UAB here, I mean, last year, great season, excellent season. I thought Bill Clark should have been coach of the year last year, winds up getting it this year. But, you know, they have a sour taste in their mouths because they had that good season and then got absolutely trucked by Ohio in the Bahamas Bowl 41-6. You want to talk about a motivation edge? I know Northern Illinois is 0-5 in bowl games, so they haven't won one in a long time. But for UAB, after that Cinderella storybook season last year in their first year with football back, to go to a bowl game and get trounced, everybody that's a returnee on that team remembers that game. They've got all the motivation in the world here in this one. NIU should be motivated too, but I just don't see how their offense holds up in this game. It would be UAB or nothing for me, but maybe the under is the better play here.
Yeah, I think that's a good look. And I think that a really interesting stat here for this one, as I was looking at it, Northern Illinois defense has 50 sacks this year. That's first in the country. UAB's defense has 43 sacks. That's third in the country. So I think you're going to see the defensive line getting a lot of heat on the opposing quarterbacks. Now, of course, UAB likes to run the football, and they're going to run it, you know, pretty consistently. The question is, can they run it on Northern Illinois? You know, I'm not sure they can run it very well on Northern Illinois. I think they'll probably get some big gainers. But Northern Illinois, like you said, on offense, they haven't been able to do anything against anybody. Now, if you were going to like Northern Illinois here, some of those angles like it, like I said, and Northern Illinois has played a tougher schedule than UAB. So that's one thing that you could say if you like Northern Illinois here. But like I said, you know, based on past from Northern Illinois' performance in their bowl games, and in those games, they've been pretty bad. Not that they just lost. They've been looking really poor. I can't take Northern Illinois.
Sorry about that sneeze. I was fumbling with the mute button trying to get to it. Couldn't get to it in time, and, you know, whatever. I guess it's that time of the year where everyone's kind of doing that, sneezing and coughing away. So I apologize for that. Usually I'm pretty good about it, but I couldn't get to that one there. All right, let's go to December 19th here. Let's go to the Frisco Bowl down in Frisco, Texas, sponsored by DXL, I think it is. Ohio's a 2.5-point favorite now against San Diego State. And this is a game I mentioned in the intro here to this segment where the Mountain West looked really, really good on Saturday. The MAC hasn't looked good in bowl season for quite some time. Now we're starting to see San Diego State take on the money. This was Ohio -3, -3. you know, 115 at some places just a couple days ago, but now San Diego State getting the love.
Yeah, San Diego State getting quite a bit of love here. There's definitely sharp money on San Diego State because 53% of the bets are on Ohio, but 67% of the money on San Diego State. You know, this is a tough one for me, I have to say. I've looked at this game pretty in-depth. I wanted to take San Diego State, and I would still lean San Diego State, so I think you and I are opposite on this one as far as my lean. Having said that, San Diego State's offense is not efficient at all, and Ohio has a very good offense. San Diego State's defense is pretty solid, but it's not as good as they've been in some of the past seasons. Both of these teams play really slowly, so if you're going to like an under, I couldn't blame you at all. Having said that, Ohio's defense, the only reason they haven't given up very many points is they've forced them any turnovers. I think they're first in the country in forced turnovers this year. If they don't get those turnovers, it's hard for them to stop somebody. San Diego State's running game, they run it a lot, but they're not near as consistent running as they have been in the past. You know, I think both of these teams are well coached, so I don't see an edge there. I want to fade the MAC, and I want to take San Diego State, but I don't think San Diego State's that good of a team, and if I'm not getting at least 3 points, I can't do it. I would lean to the under, slight lean to San Diego State as trying to fade the MAC as a favorite and taking the team with a better defense. Certainly, this one fits the angle of the better defense at the bowl game with San Diego State. So I'll lean San Diego State, and I'll lean to the under here.
So something that I kind of picked up on Thursday when I was talking with Brad Powers about this game is when you look at San Diego State here, and Rocky Long, 3-4 straight up in bowl games at San Diego State, but two of those three wins, one of them coming back in 2015 in the Hawaii Bowl, that has been our best consensus bowl pick here on the show. Well, we loved San Diego State against Cincinnati. San Diego State goes to Hawaii every other year. Cincinnati treating it like a vacation. San Diego State wins 42-7. The next year, 2016, a good win for San Diego State over Houston in the Las Vegas Bowl. However, Tom Herman had taken the job at Texas. That was when Todd Orlando was the interim, and then Major Applewhite got named the head coach. So San Diego State running into a very good spot there as well, with Houston going through some coaching turmoil. They win that game 34-10. Then the 2017 Armed Forces Bowl last year, they give up 42 points to Army. Now, Rocky Long sees the triple option basically every year against Air Force, has seen it a lot in his career, still got gashed for 42 points in that game and 446 yards. It was a 42-35 game, but San Diego State got outgained 446-280 in that one. So for Rocky Long here, not a great bowl look when he's faced teams that have some sort of coaching continuity. Didn't have that for Cincinnati, you know, in 2015 when they went out to Hawaii. Didn't have that in 2016 against Houston. I think San Diego State's really benefited in two of the last three bowl games from teams that were in really bad spots. I don't think Ohio's in a bad spot here. So while I understand playing the Mountain West and understand fading the MAC, I'm kind of coming around to Ohio, and now that it's 2.5, I may take a shot.
Yeah, I think it's hard to take San Diego State without getting at least 3 points, so I think you're paying up if you want to get 3 at this point. Certainly, you know, 3 is a number you don't want to mess around with. So if you can get 3 on San Diego State, you'd want to do it. Ohio is a much more explosive offense. Ohio is 9th in the country in yards per play, 6th yards per rush. I will say San Diego State's very good against the run, 4th best in the country. Ohio's edge here is passing. You know, how much are they going to be able to throw the ball on San Diego State? I would think they'll be able to throw the ball here. Like I said, both teams move very slowly. Ohio decided to slow down their tempo this year, and I'm pretty confident that's because their defense is so bad. I think that they want to try to hide that bad defense and win the time of possession. And it's worked pretty well as they get later into the season. This defense is just not very good. They're 105th in yards per play allowed. Like I said, they are actually first in turnovers. 30 turnovers forced so far this year for Ohio. So a pretty tremendous number there. San Diego State's forced only 13. I think that it's hard to lay a lot of points with the MAC team, but I could understand laying 2.5 here. And I think that's fair what you said about San Diego State. They've been in good spots. I remember that San Diego State and Cincinnati game very well. I think that was my biggest side of the bowl season that year. And like you said, it was one of those spots where Cincinnati was on vacation. You know, San Diego State doesn't have that edge in this game, so we'll see if they can win it without that. San Diego State struggled to protect their quarterback so far this year. They've also kind of struggled taking care of the football in general. So if you like Ohio, you like the fact that they force turnovers. They're better at protecting their quarterback, and they're just a much more explosive offense. As I said, I kind of lean to the under because both teams go so slowly and both teams like to run it so much. You have to at least somewhat like under 54 when both teams rank in the bottom 20 in the country in tempo, and then also both teams are running the ball pretty consistently.
Well, and another thing about this game too, you know, this is an angle that we talked about last week. Teams that had a lot of success the year before and are an underdog, you know, or a short favorite in the bowl game, you know, that's been a really profitable angle as well. And for San Diego State here, just 3-9 against the spread. So like Northern Illinois, they fit a lot of the bowl systems and early bowl things that we talked about on last week's show. So it's tough to go against those because they have been good bets. But, you know, I think in this game, you know, where I think UAB has a decided edge in that Tuesday game, I don't think Ohio has the same edge. I just think that, you know, with their continuity and also with time to prep for the 3-3-5, maybe that's something that helps the Bobcats. You know, it's a game that probably wasn't on too many people's radars as a really good bowl game, but I actually like this game quite a bit from a handicapping standpoint.
Yeah, I like it too. I think this is a game I'm looking forward to watching quite a bit. You know, you've got the MAC being a really weak conference, but you've got San Diego State not really being that good this year. I don't think San Diego State's nearly as good as they've been some of the years in the past, especially on defense. And their run game for a while was elite, and their running game's really not very good now. And we know San Diego State can't throw it around that much. So let's see if the MAC can get one of those bowl wins.
Barilla Bowl here down in Tampa, Marshall, South Florida. South Florida virtually playing a home game in this one here. They're playing in their own home stadium, but obviously, you know, it is the holidays. I don't know how much people are going to show out for this game 5 days before Christmas. So you really have to cut South Florida's home field advantage. I think it's almost non-existent here in this one because, again, I've talked about this on the show over the last couple of weeks. One of the best things about going to a bowl game is going somewhere else. Is going to Busch Gardens or Disney World or, you know, going out and listening to live music if you're playing in Memphis or Texas or something like that. South Florida gets none of that here in this game. And the money is on the Marshall side here, up from 2 to 2.5 and even some threes popping now.
Yeah, I mean, I would have stated it just like you just did. I think that it's almost a negative for South Florida to be playing at home here. You know, I can't give them any home field advantage for the fact that, you know, first of all, this was a South Florida team. Remember when they were 7-0, and I believe they got ranked in the top 25. And at the time, I knew they weren't nearly that good. And South Florida clearly falls apart at the end of the season. Now they're playing at home in a bowl game. I mean, are they motivated to be in this game? I don't know. I mean, obviously motivation's a hard thing to gauge. And, you know, I know some people think that motivation is overused in bowl games because you can't really handicap motivation. I think you can handicap motivation to a certain degree, certainly. And I would be surprised if South Florida was really up for this game. I mean, you fall into the end of the season and then you play a home game. Like you said, you know, one of the big things about bowl games is you get to go to some exciting new place that you've never been before, or at least it's not your home stadium. And South Florida doesn't get that. You also get Marshall with the much better defense. South Florida is not good at stopping the run. South Florida's secondary pretty solid, not good at stopping the run. I assume Marshall will be trying to run the ball pretty consistently here. To me, you know, Marshall has proven themselves in bowl games in the past as well. Doc Holliday, I believe 5-0 ATS in bowl games. I know he's done very well. Marshall is a team that does well in bowl games in general, you know, very well prepared for bowl games, even before Doc Holliday was there, but he's done a good job as well. I think that, you know, I give Holliday the coaching edge here. I think Marshall would be more motivated to be in this game, so I have to like the Marshall side.
I'm going to make what may be a little bit of a bold call, I don't think South Florida makes a bowl game next year. I don't think Charlie Strong is that good of a head coach. I think when you look at Charlie Strong, I mean, yes, Louisville was solid and the defense was very solid, but, you know, I mean, he kind of got pretty fortunate with some of the offensive guys that were coming through there, you know, kind of piggybacked off of the previous regime. And then, of course, you know, starting out in the Big East, I mean, the Big East was just not that great of a conference. So it was kind of there for the taking. Texas was an epic failure. And we had talked about this before. I think he was kind of set up to fail there at Texas. But, you know, starting 7-0 against a very weak schedule, then falling to 7-5. And look, they lost a lot from last year. I fully understand that. But when you look at next year, non-conference, they get Wisconsin at home. They're probably not going to win that game. At Georgia Tech the following week, so they face an option team right away. Probably not going to win that game. Get BYU at home. BYU was much improved this year. Their home games in conference, Cincinnati, who's very good now, Memphis, always solid, SMU should be improving, and then Temple, a pretty solid Temple team as well. I think South Florida misses a bowl game next year. I don't like Charlie Strong. I like Doc Holliday a lot more. The concern I have about this game is being so heavy on the consensus, being with the consensus on the Marshall side, but I just don't see it for South Florida. I don't see them motivated. I think they're at a coaching disadvantage. You know, Blake Barnett's been hurt throughout the second half of the year. It's Marshall or nothing for me in this spot.
I agree. Totally agree. I agree with what you said too. The one thing that I don't like about this game is that everybody seems to like Marshall. And, you know, I talked about last week in bowl games, going with the public has not been a good long-term angle. Now, having said that, you know, the public is going to win some of the time. And I do like Marshall in this game.
All right, let's go to the Bahamas Bowl here on Friday. FIU and Toledo, this one opened 6.5. Down into the 6 or 5.5 range, we do have it. And keep this in mind, too. One of the reasons why it's kind of tough to go out there and make some early bowl plays, you know, we always have something that happens here. Shondarius Phillips, who only had 94 carries for FIU, he's suspended for this game from a, I believe it was a, I actually want to double check this just to make sure that I'm not, you know, putting this kid in a really bad spot. But not going to this bowl game here for FIU, he was arrested. And, you know, this is something that happens, and it was, in fact, a domestic violence charge. Wanted to make sure I double check that. But a little bit of a distraction here for FIU, not necessarily a big piece of the offense, but still, you know, these things do happen, and sometimes it will be a player of greater importance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in a game like this, I'm surprised that Toledo is favored by this many points. You know, I think this is one of them. If you look at PRs, I don't think Toledo should be favored by this many points. Now, you question, you know, who would be the more motivated team? Who's the team in a better spot here? You know, I think that this sets up pretty well for FIU. You know, I can't lie. I do like FIU in this game. I haven't played anything in this game yet, but I might take FIU. I also like the under some. You know, you're getting 67.5 points. That's quite a bit. You know, I think this Toledo offense is a little bit overvalued. Toledo, offensively, not nearly as good as they've been some of the other years in the past. They can't throw it very well at all, so they have to be able to run. Now, the positive for them is FIU hasn't been very good at stopping the run. They're 100th in the nation at stopping the run this year, so maybe Toledo can move the ball, running it pretty consistently. I think where this game is played is a positive for FIU. I also think that, you know, fading the MAC team that's this big of a favorite is certainly tempting. Now, again, I will say that the public is on FIU here, and I imagine that will continue. I think this is one of those spots where you get an FIU team that's going to be a public favorite because everybody knows the MAC isn't very good. And those underdogs that are big public sides certainly can concern me. So I'm going to look into this game some more before I decide whether I'm going to play it. But the only thing I could take on a side would be FIU plus the points. I would imagine this line will go down some. I don't know. Adam, would you agree that this 6.5 will probably be gone?
Yeah, I think so. I think this line's coming down. FIU is probably my favorite play of the bowl season here for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. I mean, you know, I think, too, with what Butch Davis is doing with this program, there's some extra incentive to get this bowl game victory. You know, this is something that these kids really want, something that they've been working towards. For Toledo, this game does feel a little bit more like a vacation, I think. Maybe Jason Candle can keep them motivated, but I think FIU is much more focused on this game. also have the easier and much shorter trip. Maybe some of their fan base actually shows up here as well. I don't know if, you know, Toledo is going to be that well represented, but, you know, look at Toledo's body of work this year. 7 wins, 5 losses. They beat VMI, Nevada, who was coming all the way out from Reno to play in Northwest Ohio. Bowling Green, terrible. Western Michigan, that was a game we talked about a lot here on the show, but that was a game where, yeah, Toledo won 51-24, but also Western Michigan, disastrous day on special teams. We talked about that one on the show here. Their punter in that game had 6 punts under a 30-yard average, and his longest punt was 36 yards. So Toledo got very fortunate in that game from a field position standpoint. Beat Ball State, beat Kent State, beat Central Michigan, all bad teams there at the end. They lost to Miami, pretty good team. Lost to Fresno, good team. Eastern Michigan, a bowl team. Buffalo, bowl team. Northern Illinois, bowl team. So they beat Nevada and Western Michigan among the bowl teams, but Nevada in a bad spot, Western Michigan a terrible game from a special team standpoint. Toledo's body of work just doesn't impress me. And I think FIU is a program on the rise. You know, they've got talent there in Florida to pick from. I like them. You know, you got James Morgan here, a kid that was at Bowling Green, a kid who, you know, knows this Toledo defense a little bit, should be able to have some success there with that. It's FIU for me. I know the public's not a big dog and that's scary, but FIU is my favorite play of the bowl season.
I can't blame you. I like FIU as well here. I think that, you know, Toledo didn't show up for the bowl game last year. Toledo hasn't been very good in bowl games in general, and the MAC's certainly been bad in bowl games, and we've talked about that at length. Certainly that matters, especially when you're laying points, that many points. Toledo making a long travel here, a long trip. You know, what does that mean? I mean, maybe Toledo's motivated for this game. I'm not sure. I think FIU has the coaching advantage in this game. I'm surprised at how good of a job Butch Davis has done here. You know, when he first got hired, I wasn't sure about it, but he's done a really good job here. You know, I have to give him credit. This FIU team has done a good job protecting the quarterback, getting that transfer in. A quarterback this year has been important for them. They can really throw the ball around pretty well. I like FIU plus the points also.
One more game to look at here. We haven't touched on this one really at all so far on the show, so I'll be curious to get your thoughts on the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, Western Michigan and BYU. I got to say, I mean, I haven't back-tested this, and maybe I should have. This feels like the biggest favorite role in a bowl game for a 6-6 team that I've seen in a very long time. BYU favored by 12.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that either. That would be something I'd be very curious to find out about. You know, I can't say BYU laying this many points. You know, it's certainly a bad situation for Western Michigan. Do I want to back Western Michigan? No, I don't. I'm pretty sure I won't bet the side on this game. If I was going to take anything in this game, I'd probably take the over. I think, you know, Chris showing 49 right now. Some sharps on the over already, clearly. The line's gone up 1 or 1.5 points, depending on where you're looking. You know, this Western Michigan defense is bad, and they're going to give up yards and points. Western Michigan is pretty good at running the ball. BYU's defense, not really dominant. They're a pretty good defense, but not dominant. Fairly low total here. You know, I think this is a game where I would look to the over. As far as the side, you know, what would I do? I can't lay 12.5 points with BYU. I mean, they're not a good enough team to be laying that many points, in my opinion. But on the other side, do you really want to take Western Michigan with this long travel, a MAC team that can't play any defense? I mean, as far as the side, I don't even know what to say. You know, it's one of those games where I'm rarely speechless when it comes to handicapping a game. But on the side here, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I don't really know what to do either. I mean, Western Michigan, you know, backup Caleb Ellaby didn't look great. I didn't think he looked bad. Was a freshman, and those 15 bowl practices are definitely going to help him and Tim Lester out a ton. But Western Michigan, you know, a lot of offensive injuries over the course of the season. Maybe they get a little bit healthier here. They still don't have John Wasink, their starting quarterback. But this is a game that, you know, I think from the jump, never really caught my interest. I mean, I think BYU having familiarity with playing in Boise State and playing in the altitude is a big advantage for them. Do I think it's an advantage that merits a 12-point favorite role? No, probably not. So I'm going to try and get somebody to dig that stat up for us here this week, whether it's Rolf Michaels or Brad Powers. to find out the biggest favorite role for a 6-6 team, but I got to think this one's it, or maybe very, very close to it, because you know, we don't see a lot of double-digit lines in these bowl games. I mean, especially not the early ones. I mean, we've got two double-digit lines in the college football playoff semifinals, but you know, in these early games, we usually don't get a lot of big mismatches like this. So I'd really be curious to find that out.
Yeah, I've been looking up this stat a little bit as you've been talking, because things like this make me curious. 12.5-point favorites or larger since 2005, 17-13 ATS. So actually laying the points has done pretty decent. The last one we had was Florida State against Southern Miss in 2017, their last year. Florida Atlantic also against Akron last year. And I think everybody remembers that game. Florida Atlantic was favored by 23 points there. And then a couple of years ago when Alabama was 12.5-point favorites over Washington. So it has happened here some lately. And the last couple of years, it's happened a lot more than it had before that. Actually, we went many years without it happening. And then all once in 2016, 2017, it happened quite a few times for big favorites. So 17-13 ATS since 2005, laying 12.5 points or more.
Well, actually, you gave me the answer. It would be Florida State last year against Southern Miss. They were 26.5-point favorites. So that's the biggest favorite role for a 6-6 team. But I got to think this BYU number, you know, maybe third or fourth, I guess. Now that I know that there's a 26-point favorite in there, maybe this BYU line comes up third or fourth. But we'll talk about the Saturday bowl games as we go throughout the week here on Bang the Book Radio, as well as crowdsourcing some opinions on these weeknight games. But let's transition over to the college basketball side of things here. It was a very light week in college basketball last week. Is it still pretty much the same here this week, Kyle?
Definitely more games this week than it was last week. However, not as heavy as what we'll get on an average week once we get to January. You know, it's a week that's heavier than last week was, but still a little bit lighter than normal. I think there's some decent spots this week, and I'll start off by giving the Situational Spots article a plug that I write there for bangthebook.com. You know, I try not to talk too much about things that I handicap even positively. I'm such a person that I almost get uncomfortable talking about things like this, to be totally honest. I'd rather just talk about the games. But the tough situational spots that I talked about last week in the article for bangthebook.com, I looked at seven spots. Four of the teams in tough spots were Wyoming at home against Denver, UCLA at home against Belmont, Syracuse at home against Old Dominion, and then Western Kentucky against Troy. All four of those teams lost outright as favorites of 6.5 points or more. So if you're reading that article and looking for some of those spots, you had to do well last week. Now, I'm not going to promise that I'm going to point out spots that good every single week. And, you know, but I do think that it's worth pointing out that type of thing is well worth your time reading an article like that and looking for spots like that. You got like a Western Kentucky was coming off that win over Arkansas. Then they come back and play Troy, a team that's not a great team, but it's a dangerous team, especially for a Western Kentucky team that's been inconsistent. So I think looking for spots like that is certainly really important.
It is important, and I think it doesn't get enough credit in college basketball because these teams play, you know, maybe twice a week. Some teams, like, for example, tonight, you know, the Arizona State-Vanderbilt game, there are situational spots both ways in that one, and your article will come out either later today or early tomorrow with spots from Tuesday through the weekend. But, you know, tonight, Arizona State, off of that 18-point comeback in their first true road game of the year against Georgia, now they go and play Vanderbilt just one day off. Vanderbilt, a talented team, but Vanderbilt hasn't played in 12 days. So there are some interesting spots here around the holidays with teams that have big layoffs because of exam week or travel or something like that. Definitely an article that you want to make sure you're checking out, and a handicapping angle you want to make sure you're checking out as well.
Yeah, specifically in that Arizona State and Vanderbilt game, you know, Arizona State was fairly fortunate to win that game at Georgia. And I have to say, you know, I mean, for the Pac-12, it's a good thing Arizona State won, because nobody else in the Pac-12 has been able to beat anybody of any note. You know, Pac-12 was expected to be bad coming into this year. They're much worse than they were expected to be. Georgia was ahead by 18 points in that game, and Arizona State comes back, wins by 2 points. I think it's probably a better spot for Vanderbilt. I mean, I know they've had a long break, If Vanderbilt's down, you would think maybe a live bet on Vanderbilt and or second half bet on Vanderbilt might make some sense, because Arizona State expend a lot of energy coming back against Georgia in that game, and now you have a quick turnaround to play Vandy. Vandy has a decent home court advantage. Now it's not as good now as it normally would be, but you know, you've got a Pac-12 team a long ways away from home in that one.
One thing that we have seen in that game, the total has shot up. I wrote that preview this morning about 8 a.m., 8:30, something like that. Total was 153 at that point in time. It's 157.5 now. So big-time totals move in that game. I actually kind of like the first half under a little bit with Arizona State, possibly a little hungover, and then Vanderbilt with that 12-day layoff. Maybe they're a little bit rusty, but now, I mean, shit, you see a move like that, maybe I'm not so sure about liking that first half under.
I would take the first half under. I think that's a pretty solid bet. I mean, Vanderbilt, a little bit of a different shooting backdrop than the average arena, and you also take an Arizona State team that's coming off a game like that. I think it's interesting to see the total get that up that much. I assume it's because Vanderbilt's not been playing good defense, and they're playing a little quicker this year. Arizona State certainly wants to push the tempo, but 157.5 is pretty high.
Well, and for what it's worth, I don't know what Ken Pom has on this game. I didn't look at that this morning, but I know Bart Torvik's got this game in the, like, 151 range, I believe it was. So, you know, it's always interesting to see what happens with these totals moves and what happens with some of these lines out there based on what, you know, a place like Ken Pom has. And I do like Bart Torvik. He's actually got this game 153, so he had it right on the number, and now it's climbed up into that 157 range. But in any event here, you mentioned home court advantage and how Vanderbilt has a pretty decent one, but the reason Vanderbilt just had an 11-day break between games is because it was finals week. Exams, Vanderbilt's a, you know, very academic-heavy school as well, so a lot of people probably gone home for the holidays. What does that mean for home court advantage for you?
Yeah, home court advantage worth much less across the board on the break. I think home court advantage is at least 50% of what it normally would be, and I think 60% less in some cases. You know, you get these schools where the student section is just wild, and that's the large reason for their home court advantage. I think that's where you could say it's 60% lower than it normally would be. I'd say an average would probably be 50%. You know, home court advantage can't be worth as much when you've got these sleepy spots where there's not that many people at the game. You know, the home team may be thinking about a lot of other stuff that's going on. You know, you get these games during the holidays that are, you know, 2 or 3 days after Christmas or right before Christmas. It doesn't set up very well for home teams. You know, the road team has covered a lot better in these spots than the home team. If you look at the best four-game stretch ATS road teams in the past 10 years, it's game numbers 9 through 12. That fits right into where we are right now for almost every team. And, you know, it coincides with less students being there. It coincides with these sleepy spots. And I think there's going to be a lot more random upsets. I'm not saying there's going to be, you know, huge, you know, 20-some point underdogs winning outright across the board or anything. But it's not going to surprise me if some team that nobody would expect to lose loses a home game during this stretch. I think that's where this is the stretch where that happens a lot more often. I actually looked this up because I was curious. The road teams have done a lot better than home teams in the past 10 years, like I said, during this time. Now, it kind of surprised me, to be honest with you, that it's more the fact in the second half than it is in the first half. You just take the road teams on the first half, you've not done nearly as well as you have on the full game. So I'm kind of interested to get your take on why that might be.
That's a good question. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. You kind of perplexed me a little bit with that one, and obviously from the tone of your voice, it was kind of perplexing for you as well. I guess maybe I would just think that, you know, I guess that home team, as you mentioned, is a little bit distracted, does have a little bit more going on, you know, kind of thinking about those Christmas parties or, you know, whatever else, and the road team just has no choice but to be there. So, you know, maybe they kind of give forth a little bit better of a second half effort.
Yeah, I think that's a really hard question. So I apologize for putting you in a tough spot on that one. But, you know, I think that in general, the big point is to consider the fact that the road team in the last 10 years have done well, ATS, in this period. I think that will be the case going forward as well. So Christmas break, just remember, home court advantage does not work as much.
You know, and as I'm looking up and down the schedule here, not to get off track, but, you know, it's one of those things to me that's always interesting that I feel like last week a lot of teams playing, you know, close teams geographically, teams that were, you know, within their proximity. Here today, I mean, you've got Ryder all the way out at Washington State. You know, you've got some games where some teams are really making some significant travels here. Longwood going up to Cornell. Then you've got, you know, some close games, Davidson and Wake Forest. You've got Northern Illinois Western Illinois and Northern Illinois. It's kind of weird that you've got some games where teams are just all over the place and some games where they're playing, you know, close geographic games like we tend to expect at this time of the year.
Yeah, there are definitely some games this week to where there's some extreme travel. As I was looking throughout the week, looking for some of these spots, some of those are going to show up in my article, so check that out on bangerbook.com. I guess you could say that's a couple shameless plugs at this point, but it's something that would be interesting to look at for this week. Is, like you said, there are some really weird travel spots where you get teams from, say, the MAC traveling all the way out west, to where, you know, you wonder, do you really want to back the road team in a game like that? But at the same time, you know, home court advantage is not worth as much. So it makes for some interesting matchups this week.
Speaking of spots, I don't know who should be fired about this, but this is one spot I want to mention here, and then we'll get into the rest of the notes that we had listed for the show. Florida A&M plays Utah tonight in Salt Lake City. Florida A&M plays Oregon tomorrow at 6 p.m. in Eugene. Is that actually a thing? Like, is it a typo or something on ESPN's schedule page? That can't possibly be true, right?
Man, that's terrible. And actually, if you look at Florida A&M's schedule, look at what they've done here for the last few weeks. They've had one home game. That was against Fort Valley State. They've played games in South Florida, DePaul, and then Georgia Tech, and now Utah, Oregon, and then they're going to play Portland, then go back to Memphis. They don't play a home game until January 12th. So to say that this Florida A&M Rappler schedule is brutal is an understatement.
How do you play games in Utah and Oregon in the span of 22 hours when you're a team from Florida? Like, I'm astonished, obviously. I mean, you can hear it in my voice. I can't believe that.
It is pretty amazing. I will say Oregon's going to be laying a really big number in that game. That will be one of those added games that gets added later on. But, you know, Oregon's probably going to be laying almost 30 points in that game. So if you want to go against them in the second half of that, it's not going to be too easy to do it. You're going to have to lay a lot of points. Having said that, I certainly wouldn't want to back Florida A&M.
Yeah, Utah's laying 20 or 20 and a half tonight. So certainly a much bigger number for Oregon tomorrow, especially given the spot. But, again, that's a game that people would probably just gloss right on over. But there could be a pretty significant situational spot in play in that game. I can't believe that. That is amazing. to go play in altitude and then go play Oregon. Like, you're Florida A&M. You don't play in altitude. So, hey, let's schedule it back-to-back. All right, so let's talk about a couple of these teams in line for regression here. And we'll start with the team that's in line for some negative regression. And I think this one is very interesting, and I'm glad you hit on that.
Yeah, the Auburn defense, you know, they're number one in the nation in both block shots and turnovers. If you look at those numbers, 22.4% of their opponent's shots have been blocked so far this year. I don't think I have to tell anybody who listens to this show that nobody can keep that up. I mean, that's not going to happen. And 28.5% of their opponent's possessions are ending in a turnover. Now, some teams can do that. West Virginia has done something similar to that in some years in the past. So I looked at this one pretty closely, and according to Synergy Sports, Auburn's pressing on only 14.9% of possessions so far this year. You can't get 28.5% of opponents' possessions to end in a turnover without pressing. So keep that in mind going forward. Auburn is not a team that's usually using a full-court press. They're not going to keep that defensive kind of efficiency that they have so far this year up, you know. The reason their defense has been so good this year is because they've been forcing turnovers and they're blocking that many shots. You know, once you get in the half court, you know, teams are shooting the ball against Auburn. I think Auburn's going to give up more points going forward. So the way I'd like to look at this is either take overs with Auburn games coming up or go against Auburn. I think Auburn's a good team. I don't think they're quite as good as they've looked so far this year.
Yeah, that's the things you want to look for. You know, you want to look for regression in certain statistics, and certainly for Auburn. You know, the nice thing is here that you can look at it a couple of different ways. You can look at it in terms of playing overs in their games, or you can look at it in terms of finding situations to fade them. And that's why we really try to key in on these negative and positive regression candidates. So let's talk about a team where the glass may be half full instead of half empty here sooner rather than later, a team that's really scuffling on the offensive side that should see a turnaround.
Yeah, Monmouth, we're going way under the radar for this one. You know, we love to talk about under-the-radar teams. Monmouth is 0-11 so far this year. You remember, Monmouth has been a good team. Now, last year they were 11-20. They were 27-7 2 years ago. Obviously, they've lost most of the guys from those teams that were really good, probably just about everybody. But Monmouth shot the ball decent last year. I mean, this is a Monmouth team that was 111th, according to KenPom, in effective field goal percentage offense last year. They're 342nd so far this year. I think once this team gets into MAC action, the MAAC, they're going to start scoring quite a few more points. And if you look at their totals lately, they've been, you know, they're having to cut their totals down because they're shooting the ball so poorly. You know, you put up 44 points against Kentucky, then you put up 43 against Bucknell. You think about the fact that Monmouth has played a pretty tough schedule for a team in the MAC so far this year. This is a schedule that, you know, you're not going to see teams from the MAAC play West Virginia, Kentucky, and even some of the other teams on their schedule, teams like Hofstra, teams like Bucknell, are pretty good teams this year, Valparaiso. To me, Monmouth, a team that we're going to start seeing more points in their games. They don't play as fast as they did a couple of years ago, so don't expect some really high number. But I think you're going to probably start getting some value taking overs with them. And also I think you'll have some value taking them, ATS, backing them. Because, you know, Monmouth is 0-11 so far this year, but they're going to play teams that are a lot weaker than them. And they're playing a lot tougher schedule than most of those teams are playing right now. So I think that's something to look for coming up.
One thing I want to mention real quick before we get into these college basketball games, I misspoke earlier. Florida State was a 16.5-point favorite against Southern Miss, not a 26-point favorite. I was looking at the wrong game there in the Steel Mag, so I do apologize for that. Just wanted to correct that before we got into these college basketball games that we're taking a look at. And we'll start on Tuesday night at the Carrier Dome up in Syracuse, New York. I don't know what the home court advantage is going to look like here, but this is a damn good game between the Buffalo Bulls and the Syracuse Orange. They're at the Carrier Dome. I'm curious to see how this really potent, really proficient Buffalo offense does against that Syracuse zone.
I think this is a great game. I mean, I wanted to talk about this game mainly because it's an amazing game, not really because I have a strong lean in this game. You know, the question is here, you know, Buffalo is 10-0. Syracuse is 7-3. Obviously, Syracuse is the bigger game team, but Syracuse is going to be plenty up for this game. A lot of times, you know, you see a Syracuse versus a Buffalo, and you think, I should take Buffalo in this game because they're going to care a lot more than Syracuse. I think Syracuse is going to care plenty in this game. I mean, they just lost the Old Dominion at home, first of all. And second, Buffalo is 10-0. I mean, they know Buffalo is really good. So I think both teams are going to be ready for this game. I don't think this is one of those spots where Buffalo can kind of, you know, expect a Syracuse team to try to sleepwalk through this game. I don't think that's going to happen. Like you said, the key here is Buffalo against that zone defense. You know, we've seen a lot of teams look really good on offense and then show up against the Syracuse zone and look really confused and not very good at all. So, you know, how will Buffalo do against that zone defense? I'm not really sure. You know, I think that, you know, with Syracuse being a favorite in this game of, what, maybe 4 points, something like that, I think this is a tough one to take on the side. I would lean to the under here. I think that Buffalo could have a little bit more difficulty with this Syracuse defense than what they're used to seeing. I would certainly want the total to be in the mid-140s to be able to take the under because Buffalo's going to push the tempo. We know that. I just think this is a really fascinating game.
It is a really fascinating game, and quite frankly, there are quite a few fascinating games early in the week. I think this one's really good because of, you know, the implications and what's on the line. You got a Gonzaga team here coming home on Tuesday night, take on UT Arlington, who's not what they once were. But Gonzaga coming all the way back from playing North Carolina. Butler's going to be a big favorite against Presbyterian after their game against Indiana, which was right down to the wire. A lot of good fodder for your situational spots article here this week, to say the least. And maybe this Western Kentucky versus Belmont game is going to show up in there on Wednesday night in the Music City in Nashville. Belmont will be a favorite probably, but by how much?
Yeah, I think the Western Kentucky and Belmont definitely going to be in that article. You know, this is a spot for Western Kentucky where, you know, they've been a good team, but they've been really inconsistent. Belmont has been consistently good. You know, what is Belmont going to do in a game like this? I think it's going to be really interesting, though, because Belmont just played at UCLA. So what are they going to do turning around pretty quickly and playing another team that's, you know, a mid-major type team that's a solid team? You know, to me, Belmont has lost one game so far this year, and that was at Green Bay. It's kind of a confusing loss. They won in overtime at Samford. They beat Lipscomb twice, and Lipscomb's been really good this year. Belmont really pushing the tempo in a big way. Belmont, I think, will be favored by somewhere around 5 points in this game. Western Kentucky has a really good team with a lot of talent, a lot of height, very, very tall team. Belmont is a team that's more guard-oriented. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Belmont does have some tall guys, but their better players are the guards or the forwards. To me, Belmont wants this to be an up-and-down game. Western Kentucky wants this to be a half-court style game. So we'll see who gets their way as far as tempo. I think that this one's a fascinating spot for Belmont because they go out west and they come home and play Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky loses to Troy. I would like to lean Western Kentucky plus the points here. If I got something like 6.5 or 7 points, I'd take Western Kentucky probably in this game, but I'm not sure I'll get that many. I think it'll be interesting to see what the line is here.
There's a lot of stuff going on this Wednesday night card. You mentioned Auburn and the regression for their defense. They take on NC State on the road in Raleigh. Tennessee off that big win against Memphis. They play Samford, a Samford team that hasn't played a great schedule, but is still a pretty solid team. UCLA comes all the way in to play Cincinnati. A lot of stuff going on here in college basketball this week, which is good because last week was a little bit of a dud. Let's go to a game between, you know, some premier mid-majors here, Wichita State and VCU. Now, obviously, this game isn't what it once would have been, but still a very intriguing game nonetheless here on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and if there were a premium look-ahead or a possible premium look-ahead, I have to say possible because I don't know what the line's going to be, and this game's on Saturday. So I'm not sure I'm going to play this one, but I might take the over in this game. I do like over as long as I can get a decent number between VCU and Wichita State. VCU is still playing fast. They've shot the ball poorly so far this year. They've held teams to some ridiculously low shooting percentages so far this year. I don't think they can keep that going. I would think that, you know, VCU's defense would be another regression candidate. I don't think they're going to keep up holding teams to 25.2% on three-point shots. I think Wichita State looks like they want to run this year. Wichita State, obviously a team that isn't as good on offense as they've been in the past. And, you know, we'll see a total here in the 130s somewhere. Hopefully we could get low 130s to where I'd want to play the over, but we'll see where this one goes. I think that this is one where if they open it fairly low, you want to take it early on because, as I've said before, the low totals usually get fed up pretty quickly. The other thing I like about this game, if you're looking at it over, is both teams foul a lot. And that's really important if you have a fairly low over, in that if you get a lot of points from the free throw line, you don't even have to shoot that well from the floor to get an over. So I think that with a quick tempo and both teams fouling quite a bit, the over in this game.
One more game to hit on here for Saturday. We talked a little bit about Arizona State already. They had that comeback win against Georgia on Saturday, now playing Vanderbilt tonight. Coming up on the slate for Saturday night, the Kansas Jayhawks are out in Tempe, 9 o'clock Eastern time tip-off on ESPN2. A pretty premier game for both teams here.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about this one because a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, the Pac-12's been so bad. This is a chance to get a marquee win. But, you know, to me, Kansas, I know where they're ranked, and I know that they've won every game so far this year, but have they really been that good? You know, look at Kansas and what they've done so far this year. I'm impressed that they won against Michigan State in the first game by 5 on a neutral. Overtime win over Tennessee. Tennessee is playing great right now. And, you know, Rick Barnes, some people are talking about him a lot more highly. Hey, I'll give Rick Barnes credit for what he's done with this Tennessee team so far. But let's see how they do in the postseason. If they do something in the postseason, then we'll have to change our thoughts on Rick Barnes a little bit more. But to me, Kansas, you know, they've had some close games here. They were really fortunate to win at home in overtime against Stanford. Really fortunate to win a semi-home game there against New Mexico State. And then they won by three against Villanova. Villanova is certainly a good team, but not as good as they have been. I don't know that Kansas has really played as well as some people think. Having said that, you know, Arizona State, what have they done so far this year? They're 8-1. Like you said, they play here Monday night against Vanderbilt. Arizona State hasn't played too many really good teams. They played Mississippi State and won on the neutral. That's a good win. A neutral win also over Utah State. I don't know what to like in this game. I just think it's a fascinating game as far as Kansas finally going on the road to take on a team that's a quality opponent. This is Kansas' first away game of the year. So I thought that's why it was an interesting spot, too, as you get into December and it's their first road game. So it's certainly a test for Kansas against a Pac-12 opponent that is at least a formidable opponent.
Well, and I think, too, you look at Arizona State, and I kind of got a chance to look at the composition of their roster here today. They're a pretty young team, at least the go-to guys on that team, freshmen and sophomores. So definitely helps them to get this game at home. But, you know, you also kind of wonder, too, I mean, the timing of this game. We know Arizona State has a great home field advantage in football, very good one in basketball. They've also developed a very good one in hockey, by the way. It's a party school. It's, probably a great atmosphere. It's also 3 days before Christmas, which, you know, maybe kind of hurts a young team a little bit because they'll have to create their own energy now against a Kansas team that, you know, is really no stranger to the big bright lights.
Yeah, I agree. I think Kansas will be favored by 5.5 or 6 points would be what my guess would be in this game. Obviously, it depends partially on what happens here earlier in the week for both of these teams, but I don't know what to like in that game, to be honest with you. I just thought it was an interesting game to talk about. And I think that it's one of those games where we find out something about both of these teams that you need to know going forward. You know, can Kansas win in a fairly tough environment? Like you said, not as tough as it could have been. And then what's Arizona State made of as far as can they get that marquee win at home the Pac-12 desperately needs?
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
First of all, if you haven't already signed up for the free picks newsletter, huntersportspicks.com, another winner yesterday on the two-team teaser with the Ravens and the Vikings, 11-2 in the last 13 free picks. Those free picks have done really well for the last few years here. So if you haven't already signed up for those, you can get those weekly for free at huntersportspicks.com. And then also a hot start to college basketball season, starting out really well here with a 25-11 start to college basketball season. So check out everything going on there at huntersportspicks.com.
And you can follow Kyle on Twitter at KyleHunterPicks. Kyle, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me, man. And we'll talk to you again here next week.
All right. Thanks, man.
Always great to chat with professional handicapper Kyle Hunter. Again, Kyle at huntersportspicks.com is the email or at KyleHunterPicks on Twitter. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, about week 16 of the NFL and also some NHL stuff. And then should have Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com back on the program tomorrow, chat some college football and some college basketball with him. Wednesday, Brian Leonard and probably Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment and Brent from DSI Sportsbook with the odds report. We'll see what we can do for next week. I was talking with Kyle a little bit before we started recording about maybe getting something together for Monday morning. Definitely no show on Tuesday. And then we'll figure it out from there with that holiday week. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.